Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
Coming up on the free-for-all, take me out to the ball game. Was that corny? Yeah. We have Jared Diamond, Andrew Beaton, baseball columnist extraordinaire for the Wall Street Journal, joining us in studio now. Free for all.
This is Free for All from the Wall Street Journal. Now, from New York, here's Jason Gay.
Hey, it's Jason Gay, and I am here at the Free for All. I am not joined today by my, I'm going to say he's my disloyal colleague, Jim Cherusmi, because he's fleeing his former role of being my editor to be a reporter on football for the Wall Street Journal. I mean, if you had to choose, dear listener, if you had to choose between editing my incredibly decrepit copy and covering the National Football League, what would you choose? Obviously, you'd choose football. Anyway, so Jim made the right choice, but I am joined today by two heavyweights of the Wall Street Journal sports department, and I don't mean heavyweights literally because they both look quite fit despite hours and hours on the road and in metropolitan airports across this country. Joining me are Jared Diamond. Welcome, Jared.
Hey, how's it going? Glad to be back.
And Andrew Beaton.
First time, long time. First time on the show. Happy to be here.
First time on the free-for-all. Jared and Andrew are here because they are the baseball correspondents for the Wall Street Journal. And I don't know if you know this, folks, but the baseball season is underway. We are, what, 3 weeks in? This is the third week of the season?
Yep.
Some trends have started to crop up, some controversies. Some winners, some losers, but still early days and still time to talk about how we see this season developing. So, gentlemen, thank you both for being here.
I just want to know how many two-time guests you've had.
Jerry Baker, who's the editor-in-chief of the Wall Street Journal, has been here twice. I believe Brian Costa, who was your predecessor on the baseball beat, has been here twice, so you're an esteemed company.
This is an exclusive club.
Joanna Stern, I believe, might have the record with three appearances.
This is still very exclusive club, two-time guest.
Yes, and Andrew, you will soon join.
Absolutely.
The multiple appearance club. Or not. Or not.
I imagine you've had some pretty great people on only once, though, so if I stay only once.
Yes, yes. Deepak Chopra, he was, you know, we won't have him back. That's all I'll see. Guys, baseball. First of all, what I enjoy about following both of you in the Wall Street Journal, on WSJ.com, and also in social media is your passion, your reportage, but also your just general enthusiasm for the sport of baseball. And I'll start with you, Jared, because you're the senior guy here. Why do you love baseball in the way that you do? You're a young guy. You're not some 61-year-old cigar chomper working at an Underwood typewriter. You're a young man, and sometimes we hear a little bit perhaps too much about how young people are disillusioned with baseball. Why do you love baseball so much, Jared?
Maybe I'm just old at heart.
Old at heart.
I'm only 28, but people on the baseball beat think I act like I'm 50, so maybe that's the problem.
I've wanted for years to write a story about preezers, premature geezers, like people who just, you know, want to be geezers at a young age, and maybe you fall right into this category.
No, but seriously, I never really watched any other sport much growing up, especially when I was a kid. Baseball was the only sport, really, that was on.
Yeah.
Some NBA, really no NFL until I got older, so I was... It was indoctrinated.
And tell the folks where you grew up, Jared.
Oh, I grew up in New York. I was born in the city. Then I moved up to Westchester. So,
and who was your team? What was your team?
The Yankees.
The Yankees.
Which, that's a big revelation for all the Met fan followers the last 3 years who are convinced I was a Met fan growing up. So this is this is big news.
You're
breaking
some news
here on the
free
for all.
Now, were you born into a Yankee family or was this a choice?
My dad is a huge Yankee fan, big Mickey Mantle fan. His dad, my grandfather, hated the Yankees with passion. He was a big Dodgers fan.
Really?
Dodgers left, couldn't root for the Yankees, ended up adopting the Mets.
Yeah.
The Red Sox, when they had Ortiz and Youkilis in 03, 04. And my grandfather, who loves me and my dad, never wanted us to know how much he hated the Yankees, even though it was really obvious. So every time the Yankees would, say, beat Pedro in 2003, he would try to act like he wasn't very upset, but he was terrible at faking it.
All right. I love it. Andrew, what was your team growing up?
I was an unbiased sports reporter. No, I was actually I grew up in a family of Mets fans.
Okay.
My dad, who's in his 60s, when he was young, he was basically, that's when the Mets were new. He came from a family of Yankee fans, but he was the classic, oh, I'm going to go be the rebel, root for this new team in town. So he was a Mets fan. My older brothers are Mets fans.
Yes.
And that's how I was raised.
We like to mock the Mets, and I wish I knew more. Maybe Jared and Andrew, you might know this, but it seems that the Mets had a rather successful indoctrination into New York in terms of developing a fan base. Now, I know they were terrible, terrible early on and just miserable Mets, but there is this core constituency of people like your father who fell for them, and that just became their team. You know, I live not far from where the Brooklyn Nets play, and it's hard to find people who have that kind of connection to this franchise at all.
Well, I think after the Giants and Dodgers left New York, there was a lot of fan base that felt really disenfranchised and was happy to have a new team to root for.
Sure.
Whereas with the Nets, there wasn't necessarily that void of there wasn't a team from Brooklyn that left, and they swooped in and stole those fans.
That's right.
The Mets were really good at presenting themselves as the local New York team, too.
Yes.
And that's always been the case, whereas the Yankees...
Still is, yeah.
Yeah, the Yankees are sort of this national, global behemoth.
Right.
And the Mets are the plucky, blue-collar New Yorkers. Yeah. And I think people really have responded to that.
Now, Jared, you made the transition in the offseason, a controversial choice among your Twitter followers, to leave the Mets, who had reached the World Series last year and in many ways might be, you know, ascending still as a team, to go over to the Bronx to cover the Yankees. Talk about that decision. I'm giving you a talk about question. I know that's frowned upon in certain journalism circles, but talk about that decision, Jared, because I'm sure you gave it some consideration.
First of all, I am still getting daily Twitter messages from fans who are very upset over my defection.
They consider this to be disloyal.
Yes, and it's been, you know, 3 weeks of the regular season and 6 weeks of spring training.
Yeah.
Still hearing it, which just shows
I love
you
that. I think that's great.
That just tells you what Mets fans are like.
Yes.
They are a very passionate bunch. But in making the switch, look, our Yankee writer, Dan Barbarisi, our former esteemed colleague, left, so that left an opening on the beat. And I was presented with an option. Do you want to stay with the Mets? Do you want to switch to the Yankees? And essentially, it was just a matter of new. New is always better to some extent. I was at the Mets for 3 years. I was very comfortable there. Felt like I was pretty good at it. So I could have stayed there and would have been comfortable, but or you could go try a new challenge. And the Yankees are definitely a new challenge. It really feels like starting from scratch.
Now, okay. Now, you have spent hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of hours around these teams in the locker rooms. I have spent the tiniest a fraction of that. But it seems to me, as basically an outsider, that the Mets are a more fun, a little bit more casual type of organization, which is not to say they don't do crazy things all the time. And the Yankees are quite a stern-faced, serious operation by contrast. And on the outside of it, I'd say covering the Yankees sounds less fun than covering the Mets.
It's definitely not as fun. I think that's a good word to describe it. Because the team is not as fun. It's a different group of guys. Like, the Mets were young. The Mets were exciting. It's just a little looser of an environment.
Yeah.
And even the veterans they brought in blended into that culture.
Yeah.
Whereas the Yankees, they strive to be boring. They like boring. They believe that as long as they win, they won't be boring.
They didn't always like boring, though. They were one of the most character-filled, colorful teams in the history of sports.
A lot has changed post-George, I would imagine. This group, and maybe it's just this group. I can't compare it to what it was like in the 90s. I imagine Derek Jeter had a big part of this with his very baseball-centric universe. And that's that specter.
Wonderful baseball player, kind of unimaginable, unimaginative as an interview.
That environment is still in the clubhouse, even though Derek's gone. A lot of these guys
played with him. He's the blueprint for the ultimate Yankee.
Yeah, and look, it's not that the Yankees are bad guys. In fact, almost all of them are great guys, very professional, very polite. They're easy to talk to.
Yeah.
But they don't aspire to be loose and fun. They're also older players, so they have different perspective and priorities in life.
That's interesting. They're older players because I thought part of it is that they have, you know, A-Rod, who's 56 now, but that it was bringing the age up, but I thought they were going young here. I thought they were trying to not be the geezer team anymore.
They're trying. They brought in Starlin Castro. They have Didi Gregorius. But as long as you're still paying CeCe Sabathia, Mark Teixeira, yeah. Alex Rodriguez, Carlos Beltran,
yeah,
these guys are all 35 plus. Yeah. That's what it is.
Now, when you make the transition from covering one team to the next, you obviously, you know, you have the tools of the trade in that, you know what a clubhouse environment is like. You know sort of how roughly the schedule and the hours will work. And you probably know a handful of the players from other interactions you've had. But, you know, you're still, does it feel like first day of school at a new school when you're making that move?
Yeah, especially with the Yankees. I would imagine going from the Mets somewhere else would be a much maybe easier transition than going Mets to the Yankees. But in the Yankee clubhouse, you have a ton of writers, first of all.
Yeah.
An unbelievable amount.
Even more than the Mets in their, you know,
even
great
more,
September last
even
year.
Even more than the Mets. And the writers that are there, who are there, most of them are excellent. They're all excellent. They're also real veterans.
Yeah.
A lot of them covering this team for over a decade.
Right. It's like covering the Supreme Court. You know, if as sports teams go in New York, it's a pinnacle beat.
So when you go in there, I'm the youngest person on the beat. Right
you are.
Now. I'm the youngest person on the beat. There's a lot of guys in their 40s and 50s. Yeah. Who've been doing this for a long time, who know the team in and out, know everyone.
Who's the senior guy on the beat?
George King at the New York Post.
Gotcha.
He's been there for as long as, really, I remember. And he's incredible, and he does amazing work.
Bill Madden's not around day-to-day.
No, he's not.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of guys that are 20 years older than me who know the team well. I'm just trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
It is a tough transition, but there's a benefit to it, because I think I trying to bring a fresh...
Oh, sure. And it's already borne out. Now, Andrew, you are just hours removed from college graduation. You are a young, young man. How is your transition into the Mets dugout? And did the fellas take you out for drinks once they discovered there was a new reporter from the Wall Street Journal?
Well, there's a lot of moments where you see the other reporters look at me and they have this look just kind of confusion.
They're like, I thought that guy looked a little different.
You're not Jared.
I'm just glad they miss me.
Oh, yeah. They'll just look over and be like, you're not Jared. But, I mean, spring training with the Mets this year was just such a hoot and holler. You have Yoenis Cespedes showing up to camp every day with his personal car show.
Yes.
And basically giving you a silver platter with, here's a fun story to write.
Right.
And then when you think that that's getting a little boring, him and Noah Syndergaard show up riding on horses.
Yeah, you know, Jared, I wanted to ask you, when you saw that moment, you know, this sort of car show that Cespedes is putting on, then the horses, did any part of you cringe and go, I've made a terrible mistake moving to the Yankees?
Well, it did occur to me, which I didn't quite realize until getting to Yankee spring training, is that couldn't happen with the Yankees. You can't even see... where they park.
Right.
You're so much further removed from the players than with the Mets, where you're essentially just around them all the time. The parking lot's right outside the media room. The clubhouse is basically open all day.
Yeah.
Whereas the Yankees, you don't see the player. They have like back tunnels.
It's like the Pentagon.
The Yankees ensure that kind of story wouldn't happen.
Right.
And look, the Mets took a lot of criticism in some ways for the distraction of Cespedes' cars, but from the outside, it was certainly a lot of fun.
Oh, man. All right. So, Andrew, how old are you?
I'm 24 years old.
Okay, so you're 24. So, you know, in a workplace like the Wall Street Journal, you're quite a young guy, but in a Major League Baseball locker room, there are a bunch of players who are around your age, and, you know, a few that are a little older, like Bartolo. But does that count as any kind of competitive advantage, the fact that you can look at some of these guys and like, you know what, you know, I'm going out on weekends and doing the same thing you're doing? Okay, maybe that's not true. But do you think that there's any advantages to being a young guy on the beat?
I think I'll be able to answer that question more in time, but I think as
that
any
is
good-
way too diplomatic an answer. People actually listen to this thing. We don't want to put them to sleep.
But I do think that when you're able to understand what a guy is going through in that level, it obviously helps. And as any reporter, you gotta be able to make a connection and understand a guy.
Yeah.
Like early in spring training, I wrote a story about how a Mets pitcher puts his pants on in a really wacky way. He does this thing where he lays them out inside out in front of him.
Yeah.
He then puts the cuffs of the pants around each leg in order to get a perfect tuck around his stirrups.
Yeah.
And I think talking to him, it's easier for Uzi. His name is Sean Gilmartin. He's not much older than I am. And it's easy to have that back and forth with another player when he's looking at you. And he's like, oh, here's someone my age. Yeah. We're just kind of bantering about this, and that makes it easy.
Yeah.
Whereas I can imagine if you're a six-year-old guy trying to report that, it could be awkward. I don't know why. Yeah. But it probably helps.
I'm sorry, Jerry.
I think it's amazing how, yeah, they are our age. And there's Yankee guys, players are my age. I was the same age a lot of the Met players.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of difference between a 28-year-old who works at the Wall Street Journal and a 28-year-old that has a $8 million contract. Yeah, Matt Harvey is born the same year as me.
Yeah.
And even though I know he's the same age as me, when I'm around him, I still feel like, you know.
Do you feel he's older?
He just has such a different life experience than I have that in some ways it is hard to relate with him even though we're the same, theoretically going through the same stuff.
As an older person, I cannot believe these storylines. Like when Peyton Manning was retiring, they're like, the old sheriff Peyton Manning. I was like, I'm a few years older than Peyton Manning. I take exception to this portrayal of him being this, you know, old California redwood that has lived in the forest for thousands of years. Okay, tell me, in a baseball clubhouse, and it is a clubhouse, it's not a locker room, right? What are some of the unspoken rules that you have to learn on the job about, you know, behaving yourself and doing things the right way? Because baseball is a game, of course, of unspoken rules.
Well, one really basic one is, so before games, you're in the locker room and then you're in the clubhouse, not locker room. You're in the clubhouse before games.
Yeah.
Teams designate a certain time. Then the players go out, do their warm-ups, batting practice, stretches. Yeah. They play the game, and then you're back in the clubhouse after the game. One really basic one is when a starting pitcher's starting, Bartolo Colon was starting yesterday. Before the game, you don't talk to the guy who's starting.
Don't bug the pitcher,
You don't bug the pitcher.
And even his teammates lay off him a little bit too, right? You don't bug the...
Some guys are very talkative on days.
Oh, really?
It really depends on the personality.
Got it.
There's starting pitchers who have come up and said stuff to me, but I basically
the day of a start, but
I basically can't
them.
Respond because if I do, I'll just have people yelling
at me.
Oh,
that's so funny. I love that.
Yeah, you see totally different routines. Like Bartolo Colon is exactly the same before games he's pitching than he is every other day. Yeah. Whereas you see a guy like Noah Syndergaard before every start, he's staring at his iPad watching pitches, whether it's of himself throwing or of the batter he's going to be facing.
Wow.
He's totally zoned in.
Wow.
And it totally varies by pitcher. Some are listening to their music, just getting in the zone.
Yeah.
It really varies by pitcher, but they're all real creatures of habit. So for Clone, his habit is just acting the same as he would the other four days of the week.
It's probably a good operating theory. It's worked out well for him.
I'm not sure if Bartolo Colon knows after the game if they won or lost. He's just so happy. He's smiling. You would never know if he gave up 10 runs or pitched a shutout. But there's some other rules, too.
Okay, tell me.
The furniture, that's a big one. There's lots of furniture in the clubhouses.
Oh, you can't be Jared Diamond and walk over to that
you
big, easy chair and be like, oh.
The couches, you just don't even touch them. Don't even lean on them. That's kind of a big thing you can't do. They're very picky. The Yankees a little more than the Mets about phones. If they think you might be taking a picture or anything.
Okay,
that's
that, I imagine, is a pretty no-brainer frowned upon, taking a picture of someone, especially in state of undress.
Yes, but there's a lot of new, right? This isn't told to you when you get on the beat.
Yeah.
There's no way you would really know this except by just observing other people or doing it and getting yelled at. Those are the two options.
Sure. As with much of life, right?
True.
We just sort of bumble our way through it until we get yelled at.
But if you want another difference between the Mets and Yankees, there's a pretty much rule in every clubhouse, no photography. And some, I imagine, like the Yankees are very strict about that. But earlier in the season, the Mets wore their 1986 home uniforms, which are really awesome looking. They have the racing stripes on the side.
Yeah.
And I just went to the Mets PR guy and I was like, can I just take a picture of one of the jerseys hanging in the locker?
Yeah,
and he's like, of course, just do it. And that type of thing, they might just on principle in another clubhouse say.
You couldn't do that with the Yankees.
And they were just like, yeah, of course. I mean, you're not taking some racy picture. You're taking a picture of a guy's uniform in the locker.
Yeah.
Of course, do it.
Yeah.
Don't even ask next time.
Jared, I think, you know, if once you put 2, 3, 4 decades in on the beat with the Yankees, you'll be able to take that picture. You know, you'll develop the track record and the respect.
I'm just hoping to get through 1 year.
Is there a logo rule? You know, in the NHL, they have that sort of famous thing about stepping on the logo, the carpet.
Yeah, it's funny. I heard some reporter got yelled at that at the Islanders game.
Yeah.
Which, that is not a rule in baseball. And there is a giant Yankee logo in the middle of the clubhouse.
Yeah.
And I walk on it all the time. So I guess that one is okay, yeah. I guess. I don't know.
And manager availabilities, there's a pregame and a postgame, right? And I have to imagine that the pregame is inevitably more fun than the postgame, because the postgame, you know, you might have a loss, and even if you have a victory, you're kind of, you know, assessing the game. The pregame is when you kind of feel the personality of these guys. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's definitely, especially for our purposes at the Journal,
yeah,
pregame is considerably more worthwhile because you could ask questions that aren't related to the game. The managers are a little looser, but there's a big difference between a pregame session with Joe Girardi versus Terry Collins.
How so? What's the difference?
Terry Collins is a throwback. I don't know if there'll ever be another manager like Terry Collins, that kind of guy getting this job, because Terry Collins,
a lifer.
He likes the media. He enjoys the back and forth with reporters. He views it as part of the fabric of baseball. Right. And I think he generally likes talking to us, even though we annoy him sometimes.
Right.
Girardi, he's very polite,
but
clearly views us as sort of an impediment, a nuisance.
He
would rather never talk to us, which is fine. That's prerogative. I mean, he's not ever rude.
Yeah.
But with Terry Collins, there's a very loose and easy rapport. You feel like you could ask him something and he'll give you a very detailed answer. With Girardi, he keeps things a little closer.
If Joe Girardi grew his hair out, which, by the way, I recommend it, would it be like a big, thick head of hair, or is he balding?
It's hard to tell.
He's had the crew cut forever.
But I think it might be getting even buzzed more as time's gone on. You know, it's like the Seinfeld episode with the guy who shaved his head and then he found out he was going bald. I don't think Joe wants to find out, so we're just going to keep buzzing.
Do you get pangs of jealousy when you hear old-timers talk about the days when, you know, all you had to do to have a night with Billy Martin was wander down to the hotel bar and hear all the stories about everything that was going on, and he'd tell you exactly what he thought about Catfish and Reggie and Nettles and everybody like that?
In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. I've heard some stories about the Yankees in the 80s and the early 90s when George was alive. And spring training, you'd have to get to the ballpark at 7 o'clock in the morning, and you'd have to stand on looking out at Steinbrenner's car to make sure he had left before you could leave, because there was always a chance he would come storming into the press box and start screaming about how much he hated Billy Martin or hated some player. And this was the real thing. So every reporter had to stay there all day until Steinbrenner left, just in case
he blew a gasket.
He wanted to, go tell you about how much he hated something. But you don't have to worry about that anymore.
I mentioned Bill Madden before, who wrote about the Yankees for the New York Daily News and has a Steinbrenner biography, which, have you read?
I have not.
Oh, I mean, it's so much fun because he was certifiably batshit, George. I mean, you know, an incredibly important owner in the history of New York sports, but ran that team. I mean, it was a crazy pirate ship for the longest time.
Not like that anymore.
No.
Hal and Hank, his kids, they're not really around, at least publicly. Yeah. They don't talk very much.
And George was calling guys in the middle of the night, waking them up. He'd be like, Diamond, I need to talk to you.
Yeah. No, yeah. The stories about him are just incredible. And I'd imagine as a reporter, they'd be kind of stressful. You're always on edge because you don't know when he's going to go nuts. And there was no Twitter back then where if you missed it, his quotes would be on Twitter. If he didn't say it to you and you weren't in the room, you lose. And your editor yells at you. It's a whole big production.
I want to talk about that in a moment. We're going to come right back with Jared and Andrew talking baseball here on the free-for-all.
I'm Veronica Dagger. Do you want to know how the rich invest, spend, and protect their money? Then listen to the Watching Your Wealth podcast. For more information, check us out at WSJ.com/podcasts and find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and now Spotify.
WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously. Now, back to the show.
We are talking baseball on the free-for-all with our baseball correspondents for the Wall Street Journal, Andrew Beaton and Jared Diamond. Jared, when we went to break, you were mentioning Twitter, and I want to ask you both, I'll go to you, Andrew, here on this one, that, you know, years ago, the routine of a baseball writer was to, you wrote a pregame story, you know, a notes column typically with, a little bit of doodads about trade rumors and so on. And then you wrote your gamer. And then maybe you had a breakout piece if there was one individual player or something that happened in a game. But now you guys are on the hook for, things like that, but so much more in terms of the social media component of your jobs. And, you know, both of you are, you know, on social media and have good developing big followings, passionate followings in Jared's case. Well, your following is passionate too, Andrew, but Jared's following is mad is what I'm trying to say. Mad at Jared. Do you like that part of the job, or is there part of you who wishes you could click it off for periods of time and just not deal with Twitter and all that stuff?
There's the occasional time where I definitely want to be like, this is just bonkers. I don't know why I'm submitting myself to this filth, this insanity, the things people say. But on the other hand, it makes it so easy to interact with fans that you get story ideas from, even if 9 out of 10 of the things are like the worst end of a WFAN caller just calling in with a random all caps, what the heck is going on here, but in much angrier language.
Yeah.
You get an insightful comment or a good point, and it's fun to be funny and say things about the game as it's going on, and you can never really live commentate on a game, even if you're not necessarily giving play-by-play, but observing something the manager's doing or something quirky that one of the players doing. It's a really fun live way to do it during games, and I think it's especially fun for me, and I guess it's the same for Jared, because the way we do things, we're not more often than not, Jared and I aren't writing game stories. We're working on features, so it's not like during the game we're really concerned with writing about which reliever Terry Collins put in the seventh inning today and whether that was a good or bad decision, and micro-analyzing all these tiny things that go into the notes column and go into the game story.
Now, do you score? Because I know Jared scores, and he likes to put his scoreboard, a photograph of his scorecard after the game. Do you score, Andrew?
I do if I'm at a baseball game with my dad. Okay. I don't when I'm in the press box. I'm taking notes on things I want to point out. But, I mean, I love keeping score.
What is the appeal of scorekeeping for you, Jared?
I just like it. I mean, you don't have to do it anymore.
Yeah, you don't.
A lot of writers don't. I would say more do than don't, but increasingly I see fewer and fewer do it. And it's not even a generational thing. That's what I would have thought, but I see young guys doing it, older guys who don't. It's really just a matter of preference.
Does it keep your head in the game?
First of all, I'm just a dork, and I enjoy record keeping and like having the record of it. Yeah. But this is a big part of it. In all seriousness, in my dad's parents' house in the basement, I have found all these incredible relics that my dad saved when he was a kid from sporting news magazines and scorecards from Yankee games in the 60s.
Sure.
And I just thought it was super cool. So
you're imagining future diamonds coming through.
Yes, if I were a child, if it were me, I would be so geeked out like with a scorecard of an entire season from 15, 20 years
ago. Maybe you will go into a career of, you know, multiple Pulitzers and, you know,
it'll be in the Hall of Fame someday.
In the Hall of Fame, you'll win the Spink Award, and you'll have to donate this to a research library.
It's possible. I also was curious, Andrew, if the Mets Twitter trolls have descended upon you yet in your time.
Yes, the answer. Day one, they did. Day one, and also, so good example.
I know it's all a little different, but what is the Mets Twitter troll? They're incredibly defensive of the team and don't like any kind
the
of...
The opposite.
Well, it's the opposite.
They hate the team.
Well, they love the team so much that every time one player is 0-for-4, it's sound the siren. It's apocalypse time.
Right.
Like David Wright, who's been a consistently good hitter all season. He started the season at like probably 0-for-4 in his first game and had one bad defensive play. And everyone was just like, oh, he has this back injury. He's done. He's done. David Wright, he's done.
Right.
He's been a franchise cornerstone for the last decade. David Wright, cooked. Dead. Yeah. They were ready to write him off. And Mets Twitter, which has its own hashtag, Mets Twitter.
Okay.
And they love that they're the nuts. You know, they love when you mention hashtag Mets Twitter on Twitter because they're like, yeah, that's our thing. We're bananas and people are acknowledging us for how kooky and angry we get with just these little things. That's just the way they feed off themselves and they love it.
The thing with the Mets Twitter is that there's a small, very, very vocal, very vitriolic segment of Mets Twitter that anything you do, if it's not related to the owner's not spending money, you therefore are a shill being paid by the team. It doesn't matter what you say. You could just say, oh, David Wright just grounded a short. If it's not about money and the Wilpons, they get mad.
How many people do you suspect Met's Twitter is? Do you think it's like thousands, or is it quite possibly like 47 people?
I'd say thousands, but I think
thousands. Okay, thousands of cranks out there trolling away on the Met's behalf. Or against them.
I know there's these survey studies that go out about social media engagement.
Yeah.
And Mets fans always ranked at the top of the list.
They're heavy users, as they say.
They are heavy users. Yeah. I have not gotten the crazy trolls on the Yankees yet. Maybe they just haven't found their way over to me yet because I'm new.
Yeah.
But
well, they're just too rich to be on
social
media.
I haven't found people just yelling at me for no reason, calling me obscene names.
I'm sorry.
Maybe it replicates the buttoned-up look of the Yankee team itself that you're talking about, where they're not – the trolls in Yankees universe are just really polite, and they're saying really generic things like – they're really angry, but they're saying, you know, I think we just have to go out there tomorrow, Jared.
I think they're just rich, you know? Like, rich people don't spend a lot of time screwing around on Twitter, you know? They're too busy being rich.
I think if I were rich, I'd spend all day screwing around on
Twitter.
Is that
true? You know, the – basic argument against Twitter and social media during ball games and any kind of sporting event is that, you know, you're supposed to focus on the game and pay attention to the game. And I buy that 100%. I mean, there's no substitute for, like, actually, you know, closing up your computer and watching. You can learn so much more. However, it does engage you with the actual fan. And I think one of the things that is somewhat of a catch-22 is the environment of a press box in which, you know, groupthink can prevail and you can kind of fall into habits of mimicking what you hear and say. And, you know, we all know that sports writers tend to be a little bit on the pessimistic side themselves. So part of me always wonders that a nice part about social media is that you're in contact with a fan base. Now, granted, that's a fraction of the fraction of the fraction of the fan base, but you're not just, you know, huddling together with your sports writer buddies and developing consensus.
One of my most successful stories last season came directly from Twitter, which was the story about batting around.
Oh, I love this.
The definition of batting around. Yeah. Did it mean 9 batters or 10 batters? I don't want to get into this again right now. Because
it's the blue dress, black dress, or the brown dress, blue dress of baseball. I love this.
That story came to be because a very prominent Mets Twitter blogger, et cetera, was tweeting about this and asking, you know, is it 9, is it 10? And he couldn't get a consensus. People were disagreeing. So I was following this traffic on Twitter, and I thought, that's pretty funny. I'm going to go ask a player.
Yeah.
So I go to David Wright in the clubhouse, who's the most incredibly gracious star player you'll ever find any team. And I ask him this question, and he kind of looks at me very confused, and he says, it's 10. It's obviously 10. I can't imagine anyone would say it's not. So I say, okay, let's test that theory. Let's ask the very first player that walks into the room.
Right.
It was John Mayberry Jr.
Yeah.
He says 9.
Love it.
David Wright is now shocked. They end up not knowing what to do with themselves. So now I think I have a really good story. And I end up having a really good story. And that really just came because some crazy guy on Twitter was asking an absurd question, and I happened to see it. And the other sports writers were pretty baffled when I said, I want to write about this. But it ended up being a big success. So.
Well, anytime people are baffled, it probably is a sign that it's a good idea. I want to talk to you guys a little bit more broadly about baseball and, you know, stories of its demise, I think, are vastly exaggerated. But it is a sport that is, like any sort of legacy sport, consistently battling for relevance and cultural currency and younger people to pay attention to it. And over the years, there have been increasing calls for baseball to rectify, you know, its drag issues of being long, and baseball has done a few things to address that. But do you think that more aggressive steps, first of all, do you believe that time and length of the season contributes to any sort of, you know, attrition baseball might be feeling in terms of relevancy?
The season's very long. There's no doubt about it. But I think it's part, to a lot of people, baseball is consumed differently than other sports.
Sure.
The NFL, you're going to sit down and you're going to watch the entire game.
Yeah.
Baseball, I don't think, is really designed to be consumed that way. It's great.
It's a summer soundtrack.
It's background noise. Yeah. It's on the radio when you're barbecuing. It's on the TV. Yeah. You don't need to sit there for 3 hours to appreciate it. You could pop in the second inning and watch two innings and come back in the seventh. And that's okay. And I think that's why you've seen with baseball on television, it's been a problem with national TV ratings, but local TV ratings continue to sort of climb.
Do the ratings climb? Because we know that the money has climbed exponentially. You know, the regional television deals, and especially major markets like the one we're in, Los Angeles and so on, are huge. But have ratings gone up as well?
Local TV ratings, yes. National TV ratings, no. And attendance continues to go up, too, in stadium attendance. So
why do you think that is? I want to ask you about that because you know, I'm just under the impression that, you know, sports are becoming disconnected from families. They're too expensive. People don't want to go pay for parking. We all know that a beer now costs $10 and a hot dog costs $7. And I know it's not the same in every market. It's not as crazy expensive to go to a game, say, in Kansas City as it is in New York. But why do you think that baseball continues to experience attendance growth?
Well, I think there's something about baseball that, in the same way it's the summer soundtrack, as you said, and the way football's this appointment television, that you're going to be intense. Baseball,
it's not cold as hell, too.
Right. That's the first thing I was going to say. You're going, and it's almost like a picnic at the park. And you're going to have a hot dog. You're going to sit there for 3 hours. You could not pay attention and talk to your friend for two straight innings.
Yes.
And that's totally okay. And I think some stadiums have done a really good job at embracing that sort of picnic feel. You have places with pools in center field, or you have, like, I think Petco Park actually has a picnic area with a playground and grass in center field. And I think that's a feeling that you can get at a baseball game that you can't get at an NBA game, an NHL game, an NFL game. And more often than not, you're doing it in beautiful weather.
Jared, what was it like watching Citi Field, which had been a desolate place for much of its history, turn into, you know, a rock concert last year?
It was great. And you really saw it at the All-Star game in 2013 when Matt Harvey started, what the potential was at Citi Field, because you could sense that there was this fan base that was just brimming with energy, ready to explode. And it took from 2009 when the ballpark opened to last year for it to really happen.
Yeah.
But it was very exciting all of last year. But despite all of that, the tickets for baseball are still relatively affordable compared to other sports.
Yes.
Upper deck tickets at most stadiums, even in New York, $20, which is not that much more expensive than going to see Star Wars and IMAX in New York, at least.
Or going to, like, go get a sandwich in a lot of places in New York.
And StubHub has helped a lot, too, because there's you could go get tickets for baseball games, so there's so many.
Teams don't like StubHub, though. They're kind of,
especially the Yankees.
Especially the Yankees. But you could get tickets for, you know, $10, $8. Yeah. And what's great about baseball, I think, helps attendance, is that because the tickets are cheap, because the games are so frequent, you could decide at 5:30 you want to go to the game, call your friend at work, say, hey, let's go. You can't really do that with the NBA. Yes. The tickets are too expensive. There aren't enough games. Yeah. It's too complicated. You have to schedule it. Baseball, if you wanted to go to the Yankee game tonight, you could easily go. You get a pretty good seat for not that much money.
What's the hardest ticket in baseball? Is it Fenway or Wrigley?
I think it's – well, it's been Fenway, but I wonder if it's changed this year because of the
Cubs. Yeah, I guess the Red Sox aren't hot like the Cubs
what the
are.
Cubs are probably –
because what you're describing, you know, you can decide at 5:30. So when I was a reporter starting out in Boston, I worked literally next door to Fenway Park. And this was in the late 90s, and you could do that. You could. We left work at 5:30 very often and walked up and bought, you know, $7 bleacher seats and watched games. But you could not do that for basically the whole of the last decade at all.
Boston is one of the few stadiums where things are different. Also because it's small.
Yeah.
Fenway Park is small. Wrigley Field's small.
All right. Favorite ballpark. I know Jared's been to more than Andrew, but Andrew, we'll start with you.
Oof. I loved Kauffman Stadium in Kansas
City. I do, too.
City.
I love it. It's,
you know, there's something about, first of all, you think about when the stadium was built in the 70s, and it's kind of wild to think that when the Mets built Citi Field in the late 2000s, that Shea Stadium was this, like, old dump, and everyone was so excited to get rid of it. Kauffman Stadium's barely older than that.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. It has the waterfalls. It has the crown in center field.
But it's like cheesy in a cool, like, Studio 54 way, which I love. That insane scoreboard with the crown. I mean, the whole thing is just... And also, let's face it, it's been rocking the last few years, and that adds a lot to it.
Yeah, and it's just... And maybe it's also part of the feel of Kansas City where
right.
it all fits in, where you have this nice kind of relaxed ballpark yeah. where it's old.
The fans are amazing.
But
yeah.
lovely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just what makes it so amazing is how well it stood that test of time. Yeah. Dodger Stadium is the same idea. And it's just, you know, being at Citi Field and remembering how Shea Stadium was just this
yeah.
dump for years that people were waiting for years and years for a new stadium to finally come.
Yeah.
It's kind of wild that Shea is was barely older than these places.
All right, Jared, I have a feeling I can guess what you're going to say, but please tell me.
Okay. I think from objectively, San Francisco does have the best ballpark
yeah.
in America, but yeah. it's such a cliche to say that.
Right.
It's true, and it's a cliche for a reason. It's beautiful. It's just in a great location, the
yeah.
water, the views. But one that I really love, adore, that maybe doesn't get as much, I guess it does now, but Dodger Stadium.
Yeah, I was about to say, Chavez Ravine. I knew that's what Jared was going to say.
Love Dodger Stadium.
Yeah. It's amazing.
So much. And I don't even really know.
You don't have to drive
why.
To it.
Oh, the driving there is bad. But it is so, it's old, but it doesn't feel that old. It's
yeah.
humongous. There's no other baseball stadium that's that big.
Yeah.
The views are.
Is it the biggest?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the biggest. I think maybe Oakland, if they open up the whole
thing is bigger.
But
they don't do that.
But
yeah.
And Dodger Stadium, they still put 50,000 people in the stadium on like a somewhat regular basis.
Yeah.
The views are incredible. There's never a cloud in the sky. You see
yeah.
these rolling
yeah.
hills. Vin Scully's there
yeah.
still for another few months.
Yeah.
There's something about it that's just so charming. It's not old the way Wrigley and Fenway are old, where they feel like relics.
Yes.
This is just a... Maybe it's just L.A. It also doesn't feel like new L.A. It doesn't feel like very flashy
yeah.
Hollywood Los Angeles. It feels like an older, sort of charming version of Southern yeah. California that I love.
All right. Last question for both of you. I want you to give me a starting pitcher. Yeah, let's like two pitchers, okay? And it can't be with the club you currently follow. And Jared, there's actually not one for your club, so sorry.
That's a problem with the
But you can pick the Mets. All right. Two starting pitchers in Major League Baseball, they can be in the same league, I don't care, that if you're listening out there, you're telling people, like, who's a guy I gotta see? Because right now they're, you know, you gotta see him. Who is it?
Well, first one I'd go with right now is Chris Sale on the White Sox.
Really?
He
a reliever.
He's a starter.
Oh, he's a starter. Yeah.
But he does something. He just misses bats so well. It's kind of a shame because he's been on a White Sox team.
What do you mean by misses bats?
He just got – sometimes when guys are getting outs, like Bartolo Colon,
yeah.
he's been great. But the thing with him is he just kind of gets guys to pop up or hit fly balls
right.
and relies on that and not walking people.
Yeah.
Sale just strikes so many guys out.
Yeah.
And it's guys who are just swinging and missing
right.
and they have no idea where the ball is.
Right.
And it's just amazing to watch on TV. I've never
yeah.
seen him pitch in person, but
yeah.
that's the first guy I'd go with.
Okay. Who's your number two?
Only starting pitchers? Or
no, you can be it.
Fine. So I'm going to cheat a little bit and say Aroldis Chapman for the Yankees.
Really?
Okay. Who is amazing in that same sort of way, but he throws the ball just harder than anyone else.
Yeah.
And you hear all these people say throwing it's so bad for your arm, and that's probably true,
yeah.
throwing that hard.
Yeah.
And here's a guy who's just doing it way harder than anybody
yeah.
else. And I've seen him in person, and you see it on TV, and it's just, you look at it and say, can a batter even see the ball?
Yeah.
It's just kind of baffling when a guy makes contact.
Yeah. Jared?
I think I got to go to Noah Syndergaard with the Mets. He's the talk of baseball right now
yeah.
because he's throwing 100 miles an hour for seven innings. I mean, I've never seen anyone do what
yeah.
he's doing. And
yeah.
You hope he could just stay healthy and continue it because the stuff he has is unreal. The other guy that I really love to watch is Jose Fernandez
mm-hmm.
with Miami. One,
yeah.
he's got unbelievable stuff. He's
yeah.
just, he's going to be a star. He already is.
Yeah.
He also is just exactly the kind of guy baseball needs, which is
fun. Yeah.
The guy hits a home run and, like, flips his bat, even
yeah.
though he's a pitcher.
Yeah.
I mean, it's awesome. And other players don't like that, which
yeah.
I also love. And he's just an amazing pitcher.
What are we going to do about Miami, though? I mean, you know, you have in him and Giancarlo two of the most electric players in the sport playing in that place that, I mean, how are they doing right now for attendance?
Not great. It's always the lowest National League ever.
I mean, it's just a sad state of affairs.
And I love that stadium. Speaking of weird stadiums that I like, Marlins Park. That's a trip. Love
it's
Marlins
amazing.
Park.
It is an amazing place, but it's empty. You know what I've heard repeatedly, and it'll never happen, but were baseball to really just, you know, look at the numbers and where they could put their next team in terms of just, you know, getting a crowd, it would be Brooklyn.
A third team in New York?
I mean, it'll just never happen.
I don't know. Montreal's the next spot, I think. They get a new stadium, get a team back.
There's been this such a fascination, especially on Twitter with some baseball writers, of like, let's get a baseball team back in Montreal. I think everyone kind of forgets how terrible they were
in
their last
chance.
Few years.
Yeah.
And but it's this like...
I mean, I guess you could say the same with Brooklyn.
And they did have
and
so
Washington.
Many,
it's worked for them.
Yeah.
And they've had so many fascinating... The Expos had so many fascinating players, whether it was young Pedro Martinez, Vladimir Guerrero. Yeah.
I think the Jonah Carey effect. Jonah's been, you know, beating this drum forever, and he's an influential
They
dude.
Need a new stadium. That's the thing. They can't play. They couldn't play where they were playing. That place was outdated a long time ago. You know what other pitchers you have to watch? I'm going to cheat.
Okay.
It's the Yankees' other relievers. Dylan Betances is legitimately the most freakish pitcher I think I've ever seen. I do not know how he gives up a run ever. Yeah.
Why is that?
He throws 98.
Yeah.
He has a slider that just falls off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
I think he only gives up a run if he walks people because no one hits him.
All right. And that's the same thing with Noah Syndergaard, where the thing that's amazing about him isn't that he throws 100 miles an hour. It's that his slider can be 94 or 95, and that's harder than most people's fastballs.
Yeah.
How do you hit something that's breaking 10 inches across the plate?
Yeah.
You don't know when it's going to do that break or just whether how down or sideways it's going to be, and it's coming at you like a fastball. It's bananas.
All right, last question. True last question. A player... If you could, and you don't necessarily have to have known him, met him, one player, an active player, have over to the house, you know, at your friends for a couple beers, and you think it would be cool.
Andrew, that's a hard question.
I would go with Bryce Harper.
Okay. I mean, Bryce probably doesn't drink.
Is he even old enough to drink?
Well, I guess the reason I'd go with him is just because we brought up a little bit about bat flipping and making the game exciting, and he's been the number one crusader for saying, you know what? Let's make this game like other sports. I want to flip my bat and not bore people to death. And I think it's just – and I think a lot of people do agree with him. There's Jose Bautista, the great slugger for the Blue Jays.
But my problem with this whole debate with, like, baseball being fun and flipping bats and stuff like that is how binary people are about it. They either have to, like – you have to be, like, the most pro-bat flipping, bat celebration lunatic or be completely against it. And, you know, I think there's a great many people who are kind of like – I don't care that much, but, like, it is a little tacky, maybe. I mean, let's, you know, we have to say. And baseball didn't – Bautista didn't get fined or anything like that, did he?
No, I think the issue is we should just allow natural displays of emotion. The bat flip shouldn't be, like, planned artificial.
But there's not – there's no you know, actual administrative pressure to not do this. This is enforced within the game. I mean, shouldn't the game be in control of itself? I mean, isn't that part of what people love about
baseball? Yeah, but now you have a lot of different perspectives. And I also hate beanball wars. I just find it all be so silly. Like, I'm mad at you, so I'm going to throw a ball at you.
I know, Jared, but, you know,
but
that's
the
way the
game
patrolled itself.
Also,
forever,
you're hurting
you know?
Your own team by hitting the other player.
Yeah. Well, we're going to send you to cover the NHL playoffs, and you're going to get your whole awakening.
Yasiel Puig, I think, would be fun to hang out with.
That would be your dude? Yeah.
He seems like he'd be a cool guy to be a little wild, so only one night, but...
You could ask for a ride in his helicopter.
I think that would be fun.
I would love to read a story about Yasiel Puig coming to hang out with the Diamonds. Maybe we can make that happen.
Let's do it. Next podcast.
Andrew Beaton and Jared Diamond are on the beat 24/7 for the Wall Street Journal. You can follow them on the Twitter bird. Andrew is Andrew D. Beaton.
L. Beaton.
L. Beaton. What's the L stand for?
Lewis. O-U-I-S, though.
Oh, fancy. Andrew L. Beaton and Jared is at Jared Diamond. How often do you get stuff for the other Jared Diamond?
I would say at least once a week.
Okay.
If not more.
And the other Jared Diamond is what, a thinker or something?
He's an anthropologist.
Okay.
He's very smart.
Yeah.
He's much smarter than me.
We have some other named doppelgangers. Tom Parada, who writes about sports for the Wall Street Journal, shares a name with a very celebrated novelist named Tom Perata. And I thought, when I joined the Journal, I was like, it's incredible that Tom Perata, who wrote The Leftovers, writes about this for the Journal. Amazing.
People still, I still get that sometimes.
Yeah.
Wow, you're writing about baseball now? That's very strange for someone that's written about the collapse of ancient civilizations.
Well, maybe not that strange to be covering the Yankees. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much for joining the free-for-all. I'm Jason Gay. You can, as always, look us up on the iTunes and wherever else your fine podcasts are sold. We're the free-for-all.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.